Good evening. You know, that part just now, making three bows to Kaishi, you know, in our kind of mystical way of understanding that, Kai is the precepts, and she is the teacher. So when we're bowing to the teaching of the precepts, because they are our life, however we treat them, however we are with the moral and ethical guidelines, they are our life. And we do revere them very much, which is why we do this ancient ceremony once a month. And we, you know, all that bowing, that physicality of it is so important. You know, it's very easy to be philosophical and standing on the corner talking about the moral and ethical teachings of Zen Buddhism and thou shalt not kill. But bowing, letting go, just letting go of all the kind of the fixed, constrained aspects of the self. I think it's just a wonderful immersion before considering in our own lives what this whole thing is about, what we're doing here, and how we're doing here in this life. So we start out with the verse of atonement, where we atone. You know, every spiritual tradition has some kind of atonement ceremony or ritual. It's so important to do it, to remember to do it. Because, you know, we can't help but break the precepts. We can't help but harm others, take what's not offered, play with the truth. All of the various precepts. So we just, that's of our nature, right? But to atone for it means to wake up, to realize, to own it, and to look kind of carefully at what is it that compels me to act in a harmful way to others? What internal fear and anger is driving me to act in a harmful way? So that's why we do that atonement verse. And remember to do that. It's not just a verse we do, but we atone for what we personally have done, and since we're not separate from everything, what everything has done, all karma ever committed, all of it, we are responsible for. So once we've done that atonement, then we do the repetitive bowing around the bodhisattvas, starting with the past seven Buddhas, which reminds us that the teachings of Shakyamuni are brilliant and wonderful and have come down to us, but actually those teachings are everywhere, always present, and always have been present and were present before Shakyamuni. So there were seven that we can point out in the mythology of Buddhism, the Jataka tales and so forth. There's seven that came before Shakyamuni Buddha, and there's 70,000 arising right now at this moment. So that kind of awareness is part of that. We vow to pass seven Buddhas, and then we bow namu, homage, being one with, entering into respect and awe of the quality of Shakyamuni Buddha, who was able to offer the teachings to us, who represents waking up. And then namu to the bodhisattva. The bodhisattva is someone who serves others, who recognizes that that's the point of being alive. And the first bodhisattva that we recognize is Manjushri, which is essential. It's the first level. Manjushri represents cutting away, clarifying wisdom, cutting away our fantasies about who we are, our fears about who we are, and getting to the core, cutting it all. It's a wonderful bodhisattva. That's why Manjushri always has a sword of some kind. Our Manjushri has a rather contemplative knife, but watch out for that knife, it's very sharp. Namu, I am one with Samantabhadra Bodhisattva, the Bodhisattva of vow and intention, which brought you all out here on a cold and slippery night. You had some intention and vow, or else Shinryu Sensei called you and asked you to come. It's very important, our intention. So that bodhisattva represents that, you know, rides on an elephant, strength of a vow. And then we vow to be one with Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, the bodhisattva of compassion, one that has all these tools to serve others. But you know, Avalokiteshvara's most important tool is her ability to listen. Her name means hearing the cries of the world, Kanzeon. She is able to listen. You know, and when a friend comes to us with a problem, we don't have to solve it. We just have to listen. It is the greatest gift we can give. Just listen. Deeply. Connect on the deepest level. Avalokiteshvara is a wonderful, wonderful image. And because most of the Buddhist pantheon is male, we women, those of us who are women, really like Avalokiteshvara because she is often represented as a woman. And after Avalokiteshvara, Bodhisattva, we say, being one with Maitreya, Buddha, the Buddha to come, which I like to think of as all the people in this room, each one of you, a Buddha to come. And Maitreya is only going to come when there's peace and happiness in the world. So we have some work to do to make that happen. And then, you know, the last one, I am one with all successive Buddhas. So that vast cosmological view. You know how we can get all kind of caught up in our personal little schedule of life? And it's so wonderful to open our eyes and see the vastness of the whole thing. There are going to be many more Buddhas, all successive Buddhas. So after we do that, then we're able to do the four vows. So we've kind of cleansed ourselves, and we've taken on these energies that will help us, will strengthen us, wake us up. And then we do the four vows. We chant to save. I don't know. I like serve better, but we kind of took the line from the Miyazumi Roshi's early translation. But we vow to save/serve all sentient beings. We vow to rid ourselves of all delusions. We vow to attain the Buddha way. I mean, it's a very, very beautiful, beautiful aspect of the ceremony. And then there's a little talk, which is what I'm doing now. And tonight I want to talk about, because this is the first month of the year, and I want to talk about the first precept, which is the precept of not killing. It comes from ahimsa, and in many translations it's non-harming. But in our Zen tradition, we are very specific in a way, and this grave precept of not killing. Bodhidharma, you know, is said to be the first one that brought those precepts to China and to the Zen tradition. Said, self-nature is subtle and mysterious. In the realm of the everlasting Dharma, not giving rise to the thought of extinction is the precept of not killing. So he's pointing to that vastness. It's almost a philosophical statement he's making. That vast universe that is constantly changing and moving and changing. It's going on and on and on. So how can you think of stopping anything? That's how he sees that precept. It's quite wonderful, quite grand. And then Dogen, the one that brought this our tradition to Japan, and who actually organized the 10 great precepts, 3 pure precepts, and the 3 refuges into the 16 precepts. He's the one that did that using the Tendai tradition. So we really pay attention to Dogen. And what does he say about this one? Life is non-killing. Not good. Life is not killing. The Buddha seed continuously grows. Maintain the Buddha wisdom and do not kill life. So it's very clear, life is not killing. The Buddha seed continuously grows. What is that? In you, the Buddha seed is growing. And we know when we occlude the light and water and we don't allow our Buddha seed to grow. And we all notice that when that happens. So then we need to check ourselves and realign. But it's a beautiful image that in each of us is a Buddha seed that's continuously growing. And then he says, you know, maintain that wisdom, and that is the precept of not killing. Very beautiful. Then the Zen peacemakers, we rewrote it to say, realizing or recognizing that I'm not separate from life is the precept of not killing. Recognizing that I'm not separate from all that is, then how could I kill part of me? So I've been was very struck by the horrendous story in the paper that I read today about the man that killed the other man in the movie house in Florida yesterday. It was about someone's cell phone light on, and then some popcorn was thrown, and one man shot the other guy because, you know, they can carry guns in Florida to the movies. That's what you want to do. And kill this man. And of course, and then the story's very sad because the man was looking at the cell phone, was trying to find out if his daughter was okay, was ill, you know, was staying with a babysitter, and it was before the film started, you know, all of these other aspects. So what I want to talk about is, I'm not going to talk about him. I'm going to talk about my own rage when I read that. My desire to kill just came right licking up at me, you know. The idea, first of all, I mean, suddenly I hated all of Florida. I hated all the people that are there. I hated the lawmakers in particular, stand your ground. I mean, and I hated, I don't want to go into it, the just go on and on and on. And, you know, here's this hatred kind of coming out. Fortunately, I did not have a gun while I was reading the morning paper. Okay. So what to do about that? What to do about that? I mean, certainly there are moral choices we must make, and we must speak up, and we have a responsibility. On the other hand, you know, I've just been immersing myself this year in that wonderful documentary of Martin Luther King and reading his speeches. And I've just been paying a lot of attention to Dr. King and the power of this man that could face horrendous violence. The responsibility of the 3 little girls, responsibility of the various people who were killed in the struggle, the violence perpetrated. And Dr. King, you know, continually put changed and said, no, we have to face it with love. We have to love these people. We're not going to change anything. So this nonviolent perspective is very much with me at this time. And so when I look at this precept of not killing and I look at my own anger and, you know, oh my goodness, it's arising in my heart and mind, I want to look deeply at what's going on with me in this moment. Is it moral outrage, or is there something else here? You know, we can hide behind moral outrage, but there are our own fears, our own prejudices that really need to be examined carefully. Really look at that, and then try and find an exercise of love, of atonement. Of attunement first, and then atonement. Attunement with one's own special way of seeing the world, and also atonement for that, the anger that wants to hurt rather than the anger that wants to help. So very different. Later today, I was sent a story about a black comic who went on Twitter. Those of you who are taking the precepts class, I've sent this to you already, who went on Twitter and found all of these lines of Twitter where people are racist, right? And he sent them all these people messages that said, I'm sorry you don't like my black skin, but I love you anyway. And on and on and on. Each one, he responded to whatever they said, you know. And he responded by, and I love you, and I love you. And he said that what he was doing, he was trying to exercise that muscle that Dr. King taught us. Trying to teach himself rather than being filled with anger, instead to move in a different direction, in a nonviolent direction. I just found that a real, those two things that came to me today are a real teaching on this precept of not killing. So I encourage you to, you know, we, in order to live, we do kill. We kill, even if all you eat are veggies, you're killing them. So really look at your life and how you are in your life. And really, really pay attention to what's going on in your heart and mind around pushing away, around anger, and atone, and atone, and atone.